Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with Professor John Clayton as we do every day at this time with Bob, Dave, and more. If you guys have questions for John, just text him into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Hello, John.
Hello, guys. Is this Jim Moore's Super Bowl day?
Yes, it is, John.
Yeah, two of the things he wants the most, Damon Snacks Harrison and Garner Minshew.
That's right. He likes a guy with a good nickname or some cool long hair. That's
How did you know that he wanted Snacks Harrison? Have you been listening to the show?
I have, yeah. I've listened to everything.
Wow. What'd you think of his rationale? A cool nickname or long hair on somebody else? Or what sells you on a player?
This is Jim Moore, so you know it's a cool nickname.
Yeah, I love it. What about the game tonight, Professor? Who wins? Minshew, they could go 2-1 if they win tonight.
Wow, against Miami, that'd be huge.
Yeah, Miami's pretty bad. And so this is one where if Garner Minshew can't win this game, there's trouble because here's one of the worst two teams in football. And right now it's the Jets and Miami. You know, Jacksonville's surprised everybody so far, being able to win one game and stay close in Tennessee. So I'd say right now, odds go to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oof.
What do you think, Jim?
Oh, boy, John. Did you see that he's thrown? You're getting a kick out of yourself there, Professor. I like that. Did you see that he set a Jacksonville team record by throwing 3 touchdown passes in 3 consecutive games? I can't believe that's the record there in Jacksonville.
Well, Blake Bortles played there, so would that be surprising? I mean, I guess the only thing is that what's surprising is that Mark Brunell didn't do something like that. Because you would figure as good as he was, and I don't know, you have to look back and probably think he was probably the best quarterback in Jaguars history. But, yeah, I mean, 6 touchdown passes in 2 games, 3 each in the first 2. And, you know, again, doing it against respectable teams in the division. I think that's pretty good.
Hey, John, how about this poor Anthony Lynn talking about Tyrod Taylor? You know, he broke his ribs. I guess they tried to shoot him up on the sidelines, and it punctured his lung.
Well, it wasn't on the sidelines. I mean, let's put it this way. I know there's no fans in the stands, but could you imagine anybody looking there and seeing an injection going there? But it happened in the locker room, and then the reaction eventually came in. So I think it was probably maybe 90 minutes before the start of the game, but 90 seconds before the start of the game, that's when he started feeling bad and having to make sure that he went to the hospital. So it's a very bad situation. But I think that the reaction seems to be, you know, and I know it's bad, but mistakes happen. And I'm sure that, you know, talking to people who have been around the league a long time, it's like this happened more than you can imagine. And I don't know, watching in the locker room, have you ever seen something like that where an ejection led to some kind of a puncture like that?
Yeah, no, I haven't. And I've actually had my own ribs injected and toes and things like that. But I remember seeing Bruce Schultz get his toe shot up, his big toe, because he had turf toe. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like they just stuck the needle in. They put the needle in and they moved it around. And he would have to bite on a towel.
Yeah, that'd leave a mark.
Yeah.
My goodness.
So, but yeah, that was, but I mean, he's a tough guy, Tyrod Taylor, because I guess, you know, they were saying that he had broken ribs Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. He tried to get through it in practice, but the way it was, the whole thing's disclosed, it seems to indicate that he had a rib injury and didn't want to say anything about it because he wanted to play. And
right.
then finally, when he got to like Thursday, Friday, then started to talk about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what ended up happening. But it's so sad because you know how popular he is, particularly with his head coach. I mean, you know, this is a guy that Anthony Lynn really likes and certainly thinks the best of. And so to have an injury like this is just sad. Justin Herbert, now, if he plays like he did against Kansas City, then you're thinking it's going to be hard for Tyrod Taylor to get that starting job back.
Yeah, and I feel bad for him because, I mean, this guy's a throwback. You know, he's trying to – There was a receiver in camp one year that I gave a ride to who I shall not name, but he told me that he had somebody who was a doctor or friend. He was injecting his own knee with painkiller to try to just so he could practice and make the team. You know, and so this is kind of what these old school people do. I mean, you know, this is Tyrod Taylor. He's trying to hide the fact that he has fractured ribs, and I'm with you, John. I feel bad for him because this might be it. You know, he may not get that starting job back once Herbert went in and did as well as he did.
Yeah, so very bad situation, and particularly in a year, and we saw it was certainly the worst week I can remember in the National Football League for injuries. And I even looked at it, it's like things are so bad, you got guys in pregame getting hurt. And that happened with a couple guys, but of course this one being more serious, not knowing at that time what happened, and now we now know, and we see this even worse than we expected.
Hey, John, what do we make of Snacks Harrison? The word is he's coming to Seattle for a visit. What do you think the likelihood is he signs here?
I think very well. I think there's a great chance because think about what the dynamics of this was. First, he took 2 weeks to decide, okay, I think I'll play. And so he had four teams contact him, Green Bay, Cincinnati, Chicago, and Seattle. And, of course, with the COVID testing and everything else, you need to make a decision fast and get somebody in there by Tuesday at the latest. And, because then you can turn them around. Like for example, Blake Bortles, the great Blake Bortles, one of the great quarterbacks in Jacksonville history. he ends up just being cleared and, signing his contract today. And so you figure if he's coming in on Monday, I don't think he's leaving. Chicago, they had to put John Jordan, the defensive tackle and nose tackle, on injured reserve. Remember, they lost Eddie Goldman, who was their starting nose tackle. And so, Damon didn't schedule to go to Chicago. He's scheduled to come here. And I think that, he knows the division because he's played in that NFC North for the last couple of years, and he probably questions how good it's going to be for Chicago. I think he's coming here. I don't know what the price is going to be. I don't know what kind of shape he's going to be in, but the fact that he picked Seattle first, I think, leads to the good chance that he's going to be a Seahawk, and I think that's a huge acquisition. And well, John, he's a huge guy,
literally.
Too, so. Yeah.
Yeah, they've got $5 million under the cap to work with. Do you think they'll have to restructure a contract or get rid of a player to bring him in?
I mean, it might be a little tight, but I still think they can do it. Because my read on it is probably going to be, maybe $2 million, and of course it could be prorated because again, he's already missed he'll have missed three game checks because he's coming in week 4, and so I think we just watched Devontae Freeman, right? Now Freeman was different than Damon Harrison. Damon's the big guy who was reluctant to maybe play because of the virus and all that stuff and the ramifications he could have. Yet he, where Devontae Freeman says, oh, I have a price, and if I don't get it, I'm not going to play. And so he turns down $3 million from Seattle. Seattle then says, okay, fine, we'll pay $275 to Carlos Hyde and say, see you later. And now what did Devontae Freeman sign? And he goes to a bad Giants team as opposed to a good Seattle team. He got $1.35 million. So basically, he lost 1.7, and now he gets some incentives that can make up to 1.5. But, he ended up turning down an offer. If he was for economic reasons, he should have taken.
John, the 253 is asking a question about something I was reading last night that says, please ask the professor if having our offensive coordinator up in the coach's box has helped the offense to get off to a wonderful start. And if the answer is yes, would it help to have our defensive coordinator up there as well? Thank you.
Okay, I'd say it has. I know that we talked about it today. That was one of the topics we did have. And, Jake Heaps, who obviously is very close with Russell Wilson, basically said the same thing. And because now you've got Brian Schottenheimer up in the box, he gets a better view of things. In a lot of ways, I mean, he still can communicate with Russell and get that going. So I think that's a positive. And then, I think that maybe it's one of the things that, does help him. And what I'm wondering is we've seen during the pandemic, things are changing all around the country, not just in sports, but everything. I mean, you've got, working from home now is something that is comfortable with people, and it does produce. You're going to see less people in offices because of that. And I'm just wondering, is the trend going to be that now it might be a better idea to have the offensive coordinator upstairs? I don't think necessarily the defensive coordinator, because again, he needs to at least have, closer contact with Bobby Wagner and some of the other key guys in the team, KJ Wright and Quandre Diggs and all that stuff. So I still think him being down there does help. But I think having Brian Schottenheimer up there. And so what I'm wondering is, are you going to see more offensive coordinators who aren't head coaches up in the press box or up in the coach's box? And right now, I mean, you've got about 14, 15 head coaches that are calling the plays, so you're not going to see them move up. But I think the 15, 17 guys that aren't head coaches, I think that there's a decent chance that they might want to consider doing what Brian Schottenheimer is doing because it's working.
I think so, too. I think also, John, it depends on your personality. So, like, in Dallas, their new defensive coordinator is Mike Nolan, mm-hmm. who he was defensive coordinator with the Ravens last year. I was Mike Nolan's very first coaching job. He was a linebacker coach, middle linebacker only. He only coached the position I play, and there was three of us. But Mike Nolan has been around for a long time, but he's not one of those fiery – he's no Ken Norton.
No.
Right? He doesn't have that, I'm going to get the guys fired up. You know, he's very reserved type of guy. And so I think personality definitely weighs into it. But also, you know, if I'm an offensive coordinator, I don't know why you wouldn't want to be up there. Because, you know, you get a chance to look at some of the screenshots. You're getting a bird's eye mm-hmm. view. You can see things develop. And, John, you see down on the field, and you're down on the sidelines all the time, it's chaos a lot of times. I mean, and things happen fast and everything, so.
Well, see, the other thing, too, is that you can talk to the other assistant coaches and come up with new ideas or better ideas. I mean, you can talk things through just because you're watching, you're seeing, and you're seeing more of the field. I mean, what you're seeing, it may not be the all 22 that you're looking at for tape because, again, you're working from the middle of the field. But I think it's a great idea. Now, there is one reason why some head coaches or some guys who want to be head coaches won't want to be up in the coaching box because they want to be on the field so they can get that camera view. And so people look and say, oh, yeah, look at that. I mean, if you watch that first horrible game with Joe Judge of the New York Giants, how many times did they take a picture of Joe Judge as opposed to Jason Garrett? I mean, they were shooting Jason Garrett. You thought he was the head coach.
Mm-hmm. Professor, we have good news. You want to hear it?
What, Gardner Minshew's playing tonight? Okay, good.
Well, yeah, he is playing. But even better news than that, John, the Pac-12 has voted to have a seven-game season starting November 6th and ending December 18th. So things are underway. The Pac-12 will be back. What do you think, Professor?
I think that's great. I think that, it's one that I'm sad that they were so slow in reacting, but you know how leadership is right now with the Pac-12. It's just not good. But I'm glad that they at least follow the lead of everybody else and at least salvage some kind of a season. Now, the one thing I think we're seeing is that just because it's scheduled to be seven games, there's still a decent chance that you're not going to have all the teams be able to play seven games. I mean, what, there's been some teams that have already started their college season, and they've had two games canceled. Notre Dame, for example, they had to cancel because they had so many positive tests with the virus. And so, no, I think that this is great because at least they have something this year, and it buys enough time that they're not rushing back after the spring and trying to get everybody on the field for next fall. And, you know, I do anticipate, because you're starting to see things open up a little bit more, that in the NFL, even though there's not going to be a lot, there's still going to be fans in the stands. Because, I mean, what, so far in 2 weeks, there's been six teams that have had at least some 25% in the stands. And I think that, we saw Atlanta is going to open it up. Tennessee is going to open it up a little bit. And somehow I think that if things go the way things are right now, I think you can see some people in CenturyLink.
John, I'm reading the story about the Jets, who are 0-2, obviously. It says they're going to be without their top three wide receivers, their top running back, and two starting offensive linemen are also unlikely to play, which prompted head coach Adam Gase to say, whoever has a pulse right now needs to be ready to play.
That's inspiring.
Isn't it? Is his seat the hottest of all coaches' hot seats there?
I think it's pretty even right now with he and Matt Patricia because, I mean, certainly, and again, that's where the things are so bad. You know, here's Adam Gase, a offensive coach who modeled his career after Mike Martz because he learned the offense from Mike Martz, and that's the offense that he runs, and so his offense is just terrible. I mean, you give him a $14 million running back, and you get 3.2 yards a carry last year. And then now you can see they're getting nothing done on the offensive side of the ball. In fact, what, they're 32nd, I think, right now on offense. That's bad. And then you look at the other side, Matt Patricia. I mean, here's a defensive coach. Their defense is terrible, and they now have gone back, and they've lost four games in a row with double-digit leads, if you'd go back to last year. And in double games where they've had double-digit leads with Matt Patricia as head coach, they are 2-7-1. So in other words, where's that defense when you need it? And he's a defensive coach. So I think those are the two hot seats. Certainly Dan Quinn's in that mix, but I still think that Arthur Blank sticks with him the whole season.
Hey, we've become pretty used to the special team coach for the Cowboys, Bones.
Mm-hmm.
John
Fossil.
Jim Fossil's son. Jim Fossil was a coordinator in Denver when I was there, and John used to run around kid, you know, he was like a ball boy back then. But, you know, I thought it was funny, John, that onside kick that they kicked. Dalton Schultz, the tight end there, I guess he, in one of the media outlets down there, he's like, yeah, we worked on that thing like 15 times in practice. It never worked. Never worked once. But, I mean, that was amazing. I don't know how good the Cowboys are.
That's a good question. I don't think we do know how good they are.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was really lucky that they caught that onside kick there. I mean, they could easily be 0-2. And, McCarthy. Well,
they were behind 29-10.
Yeah, I know. And they gave up a lot of yardage, kind of like the Seahawks did, too. But, you know, it just the Seahawks were never out of the game.
No.
And that was the difference.
So they had the double-digit lead in both games. And, you know, they gave up the yards. And certainly against the Patriots, they gave up the points. But it wasn't they were able to hold it off. But if you're comparing the performance of the two defenses, as bad as the yardage numbers are for Seattle, they've outplayed the Cowboys. Because take a look. I mean, you know, Pete Carroll talked about this. Now, they had Seahawks in the first two games had only three sacks, right? Only mm-hmm. three. But the Cowboys have only two. And if you look at the pressures, there's more pressures put on by the Seahawks because they're averaging like about eight pressures a game, and the Cowboys are at six. And so it's not working. And I go back to the Mike Nolan story. You know, what I don't understand is that you go in and then you make drastic changes and changes that might not work out. So what Mike Nolan is doing, and you can go into the specifics of this, Dave, he's playing hybrid defense. He's going 4-3 and 3-4. Everson Griffin doesn't feel comfortable as a 3-4 defensive lineman. He's never had to do a 3-point stance, so he's uncomfortable. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence is having to make adjustments like that, and he's not doing it. And being totally old school, they're doing a lot of two gap. And so it's like, how many teams are doing two gap right now on a 3-4 defense? And so being hybrid has them just getting beat like crazy. And now they come into the game down their top three cornerbacks, two of the linebackers. And we don't know if Lawrence is going to be able to play. You presume he would, but their defense has actually been less performing than the Seahawks.
Yeah. What's Lawrence's problem?
He's got a knee injury.
Yeah.
So he's just been working on the side for the last couple of days. I mean, I think there's a decent chance he's going to play, but I can't guarantee it.
Hmm. All right, Professor. Kellen Moore went to Prosser High School over there by Yakima and then went to Boise State and played a little bit in the NFL. And now he's the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys. What kind of a job is he doing this year so far?
Well, I mean, it wasn't good in the first game because they only had 17 points. And, you know, there seems to be a lot of questions how this all fits in. But I think he's a good one. And, you know, certainly Mike McCarthy loves to call plays, always has, always will. But he conceded to Jerry Jones to let Kellen call the plays. I think Dak Prescott feels comfortable with him. But, you know, they haven't hit on all cylinders yet on offense. But, you know, at least they did get the comeback. You wonder now because Kellen, I think, is a very humble guy. And so what I have to see, is he coach in the box, in the coach's box, or is he going to be on the field? I think he's going to probably be on the field. But, yeah, it's a decent shot, but not so far great.
John, the 425 wants to know how George Fant has been playing this year.
Okay. I mean, he got good grades the first game, and then he's a little bit banged up right now. In fact, I think he's questionable for the game. He's one of the two offensive linemen who may not be able to play, but the offensive line has just been horrendous. Totally. And again, this is where bad management puts the Jets in this position, because here you are with four new offensive linemen, a whole new group of wide receivers, tight ends that aren't that good, and you know, you make four changes on the offensive line. That's been a disaster for Miami. It's been a disaster for the Jets. And I mean, he's playing okay, but you know, not raving reviews.
John, it's 32 degrees in hell. Odell Beckham Jr. accepts that he probably won't have huge numbers this season.
Oh, my heavens.
Hell is frozen over.
How about that?
That is amazing, isn't it?
Well, maybe, you know, I mean, maybe he's getting older and maturing a little bit. But, you know, he was talking about how Nick Chubb. Hey, can you hand me that when that's done printing out? Thank you. I appreciate that. But Nick Chubb getting all these yards, and he's like, hey, man, I'm actually coming to the realization that I just want to be a team player. What a novel concept.
Yeah, it's a good thought. I mean, how long is that going to hold up, though?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a, and you still kind of wonder, is he kind of forcing Baker Mayfield to throw him the ball more? I'm kind of wondering about
maybe
that.
That's what his message is.
Yeah, probably.
Could be. Could be.
Campaigning. What's the numbers?
Yeah. Well, that's just too bad for me, I guess. I'm just not going to get big numbers.
Hmm. Do you think he really feels bad about it?
No, you might be right. He might be trying to send a message there to Johnny Manziel.
Mm-hmm. To Johnny Manziel.
I'm sorry, who's the quarterback there?
That would be Baker Mayfield.
It's like, same thing.
Yeah, you can send a message to Johnny Manziel, but I mean, where's he going to go? He's going to go to a strip club or something like that?
Oh,
well, no, but he'll go to the strip club because, you know, not for any reason other than he likes the wings.
Yeah,
the wings
great
are
wings.
Good. Yeah.
I've heard that about strip clubs.
Yeah, is there something else going on there besides the wings?
I wasn't aware.
Yeah.
That's why they call him Johnny Football.
That's right, John. All right, Professor Gale Sayers, you and I are old enough to have watched Gale Sayers play there with the Chicago Bears. Terrific running back. Everybody remembers the movie Brian's Song and how sad that was when Brian Piccolo died. Mm-hmm. Gale Sayers dying earlier this week. For those who aren't familiar with Gale Sayers, how about telling us a little bit more about his career?
Yeah, because, you know, and that's the thing with the Hall of Fame vote. Sometimes, you know, you tend to not to vote for guys on shorter careers, but all you had to do is look at every time he got the ball and the excitement and the elusiveness he generated. You know, it's almost like, you know, watching like Kurt Warner, the running back from the Seahawks, you know, watching him at ramp speed, you know, kind of going fast like that. I mean, he was that good. And, you know, he was such a rare back because, you know, when you start talking about elusive backs that weren't power backs, I mean, you talk about certainly Barry Sanders, and you can almost make the argument that Gale Sayers was better because every time he touched the ball, it was magic. I mean, you couldn't catch him. He was fast. He was elusive. He was great on kickoff returns. I mean, he was just amazing. And we were robbed when we didn't get the chance to see him have a long career because we lose a lot of exciting football.
John, we appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, we're going to get Paul Moyer's thoughts on how the defense can clean things up as far as the big yardage plays go and get his take on everything else Seahawks. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We love talking football with this guy. You hear him on the pregame, halftime, postgame show on the Seahawks broadcast, and you hear him here every week. The one, the only Paul Moyer is with us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Bob, and I like talking football with you, too.
Yeah, we look forward to this every week. And, you know, you should have been with us in the opening segment. We were talking, or not the opening, but earlier in the show, we were talking about the defense. And I was asking Dave and Jim, you know, with the struggles they had last year, struggles they've had in these first two games, giving up really big chunk yardage and all of that good stuff, do you put it more on scheme or lack of execution, or is it players? You just don't have those difference-making players. How do you view what you've seen defensively last year that seems to have carried over in the first two games?
Well, I think it's about three things. One is, look, I just think it's the way the NFL is right now. You got 10 teams, 10 offensive teams averaging over 400 yards after 2 weeks. They got 9 defenses giving up over 400 yards a game. And so, I mean, the yardage now is just, you know, crazy. You can only call so many things. To me, it's always about the players. You know, there's certainly things from a timing standpoint that can give you, you know, better opportunities along the way. But to me, it's the players. And we got a lot of new players. I'm not here to make excuses because they've got to clean up the passing game. Maybe even more in the secondary group than the pass rush. You know, we just had a bunch of bust. I mean, you're starting to see Dunbar finally come around again. He's one of the best I've seen off the ball and smoothest backpedal. He's getting more confidence now and starting to make breaks like he normally is. And Jamal Adams, I mean, he's just got to play better. He's given up, you know, 2 big plays in the secondary after we've taken double-digit leads. And that's where we've got to clean it up. But, you know, again, not to make excuses, the fourth quarter's just killed them. They gave up 250 yards in the fourth quarter, 14 first downs. You know, before that, it's feeling okay. You're going to give up about 18 or so first downs. You're going to give up, you know, 300 yards. You're going to win double digits. So they just got to make plays, and I think they're out there.
Hey, Paul, on the radio, how would you describe a Brook Trout look? you know what I'm talking about.
Well, I think the way you just described it, Dave, a trout in a brook, and his mouth is open, and he just got caught.
Okay.
with a hook in his mouth. So that's how you describe it.
I thought it was a person when you said a Brook Trout look. I'm like, who's Brook Trout?
Bob wasn't a fisherman when he was a youngster. But that was something Chuck Knox used to say that was like, you know, your mouth's open, your eyes are wide open, and you look like you don't know what you're doing. Don't give me that Brook Trout look is what he'd say. But that's one thing I said I have not seen from Jordan Brooks. He has – oh, and his last name is Brooks, too. I didn't even catch that part.
Boom.
But anyway, I think he looks pretty confident. I mean, it was a really devastating loss, I think, with Bruce Irvin. Just he's such a good linebacker, Bruce is. But, they're gonna put him in there, and I don't know what you've seen, but to me, he looks purposeful. He looks like he knows what he's doing. He's a hitter, and he's physical, and I think he's going to bring a lot of energy to that defense.
We're going to find out, Dave. He hasn't played a lot. I think he's played about 7 or 8 snaps each game. Right. They used him a little bit off the edge after Irvin went out last week. They're going to start him. I've seen him physically, unbelievable size, speed. He's got it all. That's why they draft him in the first round. He's playing like a rookie. You know, he's slow to read. He wants to make sure his assignments sound before he gets to the football. So at some point, you got to cut it loose. I think you're going to see Cody Barton in there as well. So, you know, I think they're going to start Brooks. And if he plays well, he's the guy. If he doesn't, you have Cody Barton there. Obviously, with Brooks, you got someone who can come off the edge, make some big plays. And I believe that's what they're hoping for. But I think they also have that safety net in Cody Barton as well, just in case.
Well, Paul, Pete didn't say which linebacker position that Brooks was going to start at. Do you think it'll be the strong side or the weak side and shift KJ over?
Yeah, good question. I should have a better answer for it. I'm not sure. I think it really depends on do they feel more comfortable with what they were doing with Irvin, sending him off the edge. So if that's the case, you know, he becomes more of that Leo linebacker. But, you know, with that, there's added responsibilities there as well. I think you're just going to see a bunch of packages in this game also. You know, we're just not going to line up in a base defense all day. So you'll see Brooks out there during some mixed downs, and then, you know, you'll see some nickel get in there as well. So, you know, if he gets, 40 plays in this game, I think that would be a nice number for him. So they're not going to tip their hand, but I think maybe you could even see him at both sides there.
Looking at this schedule, we were looking at it this morning, and it feels like Dallas is the toughest game they've got before the bye. But it almost feels like, based on the way this offense is played, you look at the schedule before their bye week, they should be 5-0. And I'm not trying to get ahead of myself here, but you just look at the team. They got Miami coming up. They've got this Dallas game, and then they've got Minnesota. How do you see their schedule? And then it gets tougher. You got the Cardinals, you got the 49ers. It certainly gets tougher after the bye. But have you looked ahead much on the schedule?
Yeah, I looked at it at the beginning of the year, and you don't know until obviously teams go out and start playing what that schedule is, how it's going to unfold. You know, the Patriots seemed like an easy game just because they had lost so many players and Tom Brady, and obviously that became a tough game. You know, the Cowboys was the one that was staring at us, and I think you're right, Bob. It's the best quarterback we're most likely going to play the rest of the year. Though Kyle Murray's starting to look like a factor as well. Miami is without question a game that you should take care of. This is a big game. This is not a game we match up well, at least historically, with. You know, the Cowboys have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. They can rush the quarterback. They've got skill position. They can run it, so they can be a balanced offense. We just have not really matched up well with them. So, you know, I'm a bit nervous going into this game. I still think we got the best player on the field. I think we do have the better team. But, you know, we got to play better in the fourth quarter because we've had now double-digit leads. That's rare for us. You know, it start off hot for the most part. We got to find a way to put teams away. But you're right. I think we should be 5-0 when we play the Cardinals.
Paul, you mentioned best player on the field. That's Russell Wilson. Where were you with the 3rd-and-1.5 call at the time and then afterwards?
Well, I think that it was dictated by what New England did. If you go and look at that play and freeze it, they have 11 guys. I'm exaggerating a little. They have 11 guys on the line of scrimmage. They actually had one guy as a linebacker who was off the ball, but he was about 2 yards from the line of scrimmage. Everybody's up and bump and run. We had gone with a spread formation, you know, with four wide receivers, I think was at the time. So there's not a whole lot you can do. You really can't run it there. There's no numbers for that. You don't have a running back that's going to pound the football there. So you have to go over the top. There was a matchup, certainly one of our wide receivers. I want to say it was, Moore against one of their safeties, but I'm drawing a blank actually if it was him. That's where you'd want to go. You want to go a wide receiver against safety with, you know, nobody in the center field. He went with his comfort. You know, with Tyler Lockett, he was there. I mean, he had beat the guy off the ball. You know, a little better throw, you make a big play. I never question calls because you got to go out and execute them. I don't like the spread formation in that position because you're really tipping your hand what you're going to do. And so I can blitz you. You are going to have to throw the ball quick, and you're going to, a lot of times it's just a fade and you got to make a play. At the flip side, I could take the other side and say, well, what the Seahawks did against the Patriots, they forced their hand that we knew exactly what they were going to do, and they were going to blitz us. So I'm okay with it. You've got to make that play, and I don't know if there was another option.
Paul, we appreciate it, as always. Stay safe out there. We'll talk again next week.
All right, you guys. Thanks. Appreciate it.
There you go. Paul Moyer with us every week. Again, you can catch him on the Seahawks broadcast, pregame, halftime, postgame as well. Coming up, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Gardner Minshew debate beards versus mustaches. And Marshawn Lynch talks about the possibility of a Seattle reunion. All that coming up when we sweep the dial with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
The mustache versus the beard. I think the beard is a cooler look. And I think guys that grow mustaches a lot of times have patchy sides for their beards. So they just stick with the mustache. But my wife appreciates the mustache trimmed up a little bit more. But she does hate the beard too. So I guess that's a lose-lose for me.
Hey, Gardner. Ryan Fitzpatrick was having some fun earlier today. He was saying that beards are way cooler than mustaches because guys with mustaches have patchy sides. I just want to know if you want to maybe defend the mustache or anything today, have a little fun.
Oh, no, man. I'll let mine speak for itself. You know, I think I've shown I can grow a beard with no patchy sides. But, you know, I'm gonna have respect for my elders. You know, especially when they're much, much elder. Oh, be respectful.
Ooh, I'm going to give that one to Minshew. That was good. That was Ryan Fitzpatrick and Gardner Minshew just having fun there with a little media session before tonight's matchup between the Jags and the Dolphins. It's a battle of the Titans out there, I'll tell you what. But
you'll be watching.
I'll watch any NFL football, Jim. I was asking Dave, are we going to lose Jim's attention at 5:20? Is he going to be useless at that point?
Well, you've already lost it.
Yeah, about 3 years ago. Hey, Jim, by the way, there's no dang TV in here still, so we can't watch
it. There's no TV.
Yeah, I forgot about that part when I
don't act surprised, Jim.
I agreed to come back in, but, you know, I got to say, I love Gardner Minshew.
I know.
I can't get enough of that guy.
The only thing that makes you shy away from him a bit is
the
Jim's. Yeah, Jim's just a little heavy-handed with the Gardner Minshew love, shoving it down your throat at every open opportunity. At times you go, you know what, maybe I want to see him struggle tonight.
Yeah, I like to think Jim does that just to get under our skin, and he knows that he's sticking it to us whenever he asks a Gardner Minshew. But you can't, Jim, you can't take any love away from Gardner Minshew. I'm telling you, I love that guy. He's really funny. That was well done by him, but he just seems like one of those guys you'd want to be around. I asked the question today, if you could sit on a plane next to any NFL player that's not a Seahawk current, who would it be? And mine, Jim, you won't believe this, one of them was Cam Newton because I think he's so weird. But Jake Heaps said Gardner Minshew was one of them.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, good for Jake. Boy, the cooking person getting something right there.
Oh, see?
Yeah, with
the
Gardner
shot
Minshew.
Unnecessary.
I know you would pick Gardner Minshew. Bob's pick, retired, but still.
Peyton Manning?
Yeah, before he said retire, you just said NFL player. I'm like, yeah. Well, Peyton Manning.
Because he's so funny.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Look, bonehead, plug my little guy, man.
MVP?
That's my son.
That's your son?
Mm-hmm. I got kids over there. Russ and Tyler.
Killing it.
Bobby.
Why didn't you go back?
Man, I got kids. I just told you I got kids. I was a proud dad, man. My kids was like, hey, Bobby, bro. You feel me? Can you slide back? You feel me? We can use you like that. Hey, man. Do you have kids?
I do, three.
If your kids call you and, hey, Pop, we need you on your way, right?
Yeah.
Our kids up there, Pete, John, all my kids, they was like, hey, Pop, you think you could come up here? We kind of, yeah. And I'm like, man, you feel me? Hey, man, I'm going to come holler at my kids, come check it out. And then it just so happened, a situation, you know, it came about. And, I mean, I just tried to capitalize on it.
Are they going
to
call you again?
Oh, I don't know. They got my boy. That young boy over there looking good.
But Chris, if they call you and say, hey, we need you again, would you do it?
I mean, you know, I had to get on the phone with my kids and see what's going on. Because right now I like what they got going on. You feel me? I'll stay planted right now. But if, you know, if it got spunky or something, though, you know, I'll never turn my back on my kids.
Dave's looking at me for translation. Spunky? Is that what he said?
That's what I thought I heard.
That's Marshawn Lynch, in case you didn't recognize his voice. He was on with Ariel Helwani on his MMA show, of all things, and he was asked about Russ for MVP, called him his son, talked about everybody else out there being his kids, including Pete and John. Yeah. Pete, 69 years old, is his son, or his kid, one of his kids. And if they called, your kids call and they need you? You're a dad. You're going
to
go.
Did he refer to Chris Carson, you think, there?
Yeah.
When he was like,
I think so.
Yeah, that's who he was talking about.
I'm with him on that. Chris Carson, that might have been one of the better catches in that game that he made, the touchdown, how he tracked that down. It was almost like he was
three
tracking.
Three touchdowns all receiving this year.
Yeah. It was like he was tracking down a fly ball in the outfield. But, yeah, I love listening to Marshawn talk. It's better in person or when you can see video.
Yeah.
But you got to love that.
Yeah, what's the commercial he's doing now? Is it for Doritos?
Yeah, with Gronk and Brady. And,
oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, he's like reading it like the night before Christmas or something like that.
Oftentimes players take painkilling injections before games, but rarely do players have their own lungs punctured by their own team doctors. Now, there is risk every time a player gets a shot, a painkilling injection, and players know that risk before they get that injection. But seldom does it result in the result that the Chargers had last Sunday when Tyrod Taylor was supposed to be starting against the defending world champion Chiefs. He had two cracked ribs that he suffered early in the regular season opener against the Cincinnati Bengals. And to basically dumb the pain that he had in those ribs before the game to protect himself, the doctors gave him an injection in the rib area and accidentally punctured his lung.
Jim, why don't you go first, since Matt had no interest in any of your thoughts on Marshawn Lynch?
No, when I heard that story, I thought, oh, man, how can a doctor screw up like that? Malpractice. And that was my knee-jerk reaction. And then I saw Sam Farmer on Twitter from the LA Times talking about how there's just a slight margin of error when you're taking a shot to the ribs like that. And it's not as surprising as we would think it is. But, man, don't you feel bad for Tyrod Taylor? I know we all do. And yet, you look at him. I've always kind of liked him as a quarterback. I remember how good he was against the Seahawks in that Monday night game.
When he's in Buffalo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had the Bills down to the 10-yard line. They were threatening to win that game.
Yep.
And he's a decent quarterback. But what do you do if you're Anthony Lynn at this point when Taylor's good to go in 3 weeks? If Justin Herbert plays like he did against the Chiefs the next 3 weeks? Do you still give the job back to Taylor?
Not if they're winning.
I hate to say this, but don't worry. Justin Herbert will get hurt.
Everybody, he showed some toughness on that hit with the linebacker.
That's true. He took out a linebacker. But, I mean, it just feels like everybody's getting hurt. But
you've taken that shot to the ribs?
Oh, a pain-killing injection?
Yeah, the shot, needle.
Yes. Yeah, so
sounds
I didn't...
awful.
Well, there's worse places, but...
I'm assuming there are.
Big toe. Yeah, big toe. Yeah, but... yeah, and I've had, like, wrist and, you know, palm of my hand and everything. That didn't bother me, but, yeah. But the rib thing was pretty necessary. I got kicked by Rod Bernstein in practice. He, like, you know, his foot came flying up and kicked me right in the rib. Ah, that's so painful, man. And you can't get up. You can't sneeze. You can't laugh. I mean, so I kind of feel bad for the doctor. I mean, look, he obviously... These team doctors and the trainers and everything, they take such good care of these guys. And I'm sure he felt terrible about it. But, yeah, I got a special place in my heart for Tyrod Taylor. I just think I think he can be a starter somewhere in the league. Maybe not down in L.A. with the Chargers, but he really is a good player. Always liked him. He seemed like everybody loves him on the team, and it's too bad for him. I feel bad for him because he probably could have got a few starts just to bring Herbert along
right. And
help his career a little bit, and then this happens. It's a bummer for him.
But to answer Jim's question, though, let's say 3 weeks later, Herbert's been playing great, and more importantly, they're winning.
Yeah.
You can't disrupt that, can you?
No way. No. Yeah, absolutely. And what pick was he, Herbert? Was he like the 10th?
No, he was like 6th, I think.
6th, yeah.
I believe he was the 6th overall pick. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. Somewhere in there. But, yeah, if they're winning, Jim, I don't think you mess with whatever's working. All right, coming up, time for our player spotlight. We're going to talk with Seahawks wide receiver David Moore about his spectacular catch last week and whether this is the best offense he's ever played on. It's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.